thanks to our sponsor, ShareGate. You probably didn't get into cloud engineering to spend hours manually sifting through layers of data or manually creating reports to understand and explain your Azure costs. Neither did the IT pros at ShareGate, which is why they built ShareGate Overcast. ShareGate Overcast is an Azure cost intelligence tool that reduces manual monitoring and helps you make cost-efficient engineering decisions. And it can help you lower your Azure bill. ShareGate Overcast scans your Azure environment daily and analyzes your cost data. It automatically identifies cost issues and gives you the insights that you need to fix problems fast. Plus, with personalized cost savings recommendations, you can be sure that you're only paying for the resources that you need. And best of all, you can get ShareGate Overcast for free. Find out more at ShareGate.com/cloudshow. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 386, where CJ and I are going to catch up on some of the latest news from Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Microsoft 365, recorded live Friday the 20th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Raygun.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night, knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes.
Back to the show. Good morning, afternoon, CJ. Afternoon.
Good evening, Andrew Connell. This is November Zulu 1, ready for departure on podcast 386, taxiing to runway 16 left, ready for departure.
Well done, man. Well done. It's a carryover from our pre-show.
I've kind of gone deep on the whole flight sim thing, haven't I? How about you?
I haven't. So you've got to give everyone, like, give everybody like the, not the elevator pitch, but give them like the 1 or 2 minute, like, what was that you were telling me on the pre-show? This is fascinating.
I've been playing around with Microsoft Flight Sim 2020, as I think we've spoken about on the show previously. And so I've been getting into that and learning about how to fly planes and all that sort of stuff. But turns out there's this whole shadow world of air traffic control that is a virtual version of the real air traffic control world out there, right? So as a flight simmer, you can join this, and it's real people doing air traffic control for the various parts of the world. And so if you want to learn about air traffic control, how to taxi and depart and take off and get from place to place and all that with talking real air traffic control, you can do it in a virtual world without having to mess up real world flights.
That's crazy.
So it blows my mind. Like, looking at the moment, there's about 1,200 people connected into this virtual air traffic control simulation. And there's people that play the parts of obviously pilots, right? But also the air traffic controllers themselves. So you can participate in it. And it's super snurfy, nerdy stuff, but it's pretty, I find it fascinating. It's fascinating.
It is pretty cool.
I know nothing about it. I'm just learning and trying not to completely balls up in the process. And they take it pretty seriously. Like, it's, you know.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, you can't muck around.
So do you have any of those remove before flight tags on your chair or at your desk yet?
Not yet. but now you mention it.
I was about to say, I'm like, come on, man. I know. I'm sure that either the kids are rolling their eyes or Vicky's rolling her eyes at you with this stuff, right? But I mean,
oh yeah,
come on, you gotta have those.
Yeah, that would be pretty. That'd be pretty epic. I could have one on my microphone. What am I, throttle and joystick that I've got that I'm using for flying at the moment? My pedals, for example. Yeah, I could go full nerd
totally,
out on
man.
It.
You totally could. Where's your notebook?
Hey, but if anybody's listening who's into this whole thing, who uses VATSIM or Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020, and you want to connect up, hit me up on Twitter and we'll see if we can go flying. It'd be kind of fun.
That's too cool, man. That's really cool.
How about you? You've got a busy week ahead of you, from what I understand.
I got a busy week behind me, and I got a busy week coming up. So thankfully, I think I'm actually in pretty good shape. Yeah, so Black Friday is the week. that this comes out, the week this episode comes out, is the Thanksgiving week in the United States, which also, I guess it was a United States phenomenon that is kind of, I guess it's gone a bit more.
Black Friday is kind of gone. Yeah, wider than the States for sure.
So you've got like, it's a series, it's basically called Black Friday weekend, but it's Black Friday, which is like when everyone does a bunch of crazy sales, and then Small Business Saturday, which is an American Express thing. Sunday, I forget what that is. Local Sunday, maybe. And then
Cyber Monday.
Yeah, and then Cyber Monday is Monday. So you get about 4 days of stuff. And so we've been, I mean, trying to get everything up and running. My new MS600 exam prep course is going live for pre-release on Tuesday, December the 1st. But I'm doing a pre-launch over the course of the Black Friday weekend where people, I'm knocking $50 off of it for people. I'm knocking 30% off enrollments in my SharePoint framework course, including upgrades.
You've got some whopper deal that you're only doing for like a short period of time, right? What's that? I saw your video you put out.
So
for those who are listening who might be interested in this stuff, what's the big whopper that you've got limited versions of or limited editions
of? It starts at 9 o'clock Eastern time on Black Friday. And if you enroll in my, if you're not a customer of my Mastering SharePoint Framework course, if you enroll in my ultimate bundle of Mastering the SharePoint Framework, then when you check out, you will have the opportunity to add on the MS600 exam prep course, but for an even deeper discount, $100 off. So it's going to go from, normally it's going to be priced, the pre-release is going to be $249. Over Black Friday, it's going to be $199. And then over the course of the Black Friday weekend, you can save like an additional $25 or $50 if you add it on to the existing one. But that's only going to be available for the first hour of Black Friday or for the first 100 people that jump on board it. So whichever one comes first, which is going to be, I'm going to be frantic that morning when that happens, because I have no way to say to set that up in my system. So I have to watch how many people come in and when the hour is up, so I can like...
then turn it off.
You have to manually remove it from like the upsells and stuff. So, but hey, if someone gets in there before I can actually shut things off, then I mean, good on them. So, but whatever.
Awesome. Well, I guess this will be coming out on Tuesday. So we won't have another podcast before this is all over. Mm-hmm. So I hope it all goes really well for you.
I do too. And in fact, I guess we better talk about when we're going to do our next podcast, because usually we do it on Thursdays, which is Thanksgiving. Yeah. And then if we miss it, like today, this week we had a conflict, so we punted it to Friday. And I'm not so sure Friday is going to be good. It probably will be.
Oh, come on. Friday morning. You have heaps of time.
I mean, that's the nice thing, right? Because for you, it's like it's Friday morning. For me, it's like Friday, like late morning. So by then it should be fine.
Dude, I have to get up at 6 a.m. to get $100 off. Like, what are you talking about? 6 a.m. It's unheard of. All right. Well, yes. No, I hope it all rocks along for you.
Yeah. Thank you. And if anybody wants to learn more about it, like CJ said, there's a blog post that points to the page that is in the show notes. It points to the main page where everything is going to be spelled out, the discount codes and everything. The discount codes are not there yet. They won't be there until the morning of Black Friday. And there's also a video there that you can watch to where I explain everything. It takes about 4 or 5 minutes to explain everything. But yeah, so... Hey, look, cards on the table.
Nice.
Pandemic has been really good for some businesses and really bad for other businesses. And for some businesses, it's made things challenging. For a small business training company that does developer training, it's more on the challenging side of the needle. I've been working real hard to get everything ready. The course is ready. The exam prep course will go live with 30%, with a third of the content finished and published. That means that I'm also ahead of schedule. So my current plan is to publish, have the whole course done by February of next year. So in 3 months. But right now I'm looking like I'm way ahead of schedule of that. So I don't want to commit to anything, but hopefully I'll have more chapters drop in December. And then I don't know. I mean, maybe I get it done by the end of the year. I doubt it, but probably by January. Mm. We'll see.
Be a nice New Year's present.
Man, it would be nice to have it done, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
What do you think doing some news today? We got a few things that have happened in the newsy world. So want to cover some news?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and Regional Director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. And we're back. Okay, I'll start us off. I have a handful of Microsoft 365 things to run through. I'll do one of them first. All of these are either graphy or Teamsy, kind of 365-y stuffy.
Yeah,
it's getting weird.
Teamsy, stuffy, graphy, Teamsy. Yeah.
So this first one, this is interesting. You know, whenever we do these, some of these news things, I know that I'm not the target audience for this, and I recognize that the people around me are also not the target audience for it. And so when something comes out, I look at it and I'm kind of like, I wonder who this is for. And I know that this can come across as me being like dismissive of what Microsoft is doing. I don't mean that. I'm actually genuinely curious of this because they wouldn't do this if if customers weren't asking for this. They hadn't done the research on this. But Microsoft has a blog post that came out on Thursday, November the 19th, about bringing personal features in Microsoft Teams to desktop and web are now available in preview. And there are some things here where it's like, you want to use Microsoft Teams not in a work setting, but in a personal setting. I really would like to know, I'd really like to hear like where this would be used, because I mean, a work setting is still kind of like an educational setting. So I would think that work in school is still education. So beyond that, outside of work, I mean, where are you using Microsoft Teams? Some of the things that are kind of interesting about this though, is that they've got like some features they've added to like the Teams mobile app to where, let's say that I was on Teams mobile, I could actually send you a chat message from the Teams client. But if you don't have Teams installed, it comes to you as a text message. And when you respond, it comes back to me in the Teams conversation.
Yeah. I got a few thoughts on this. One, Microsoft want you to get off Skype and use Teams instead, because there's still tens and tens and tens of millions of people who use Skype, the consumer version of Skype, to call each other. And my take is that Microsoft want you to get off that and move to something else. So they're building, so Teams is their answer to everything right now. So you've got to go to Teams, right? Whether that's the right thing or not is a whole separate point. But, you know, they introduce these personal features into Teams, being able to sign in with an MSA, for example, and, you know, have a personal version of Teams, I suppose, if you will. You can do like this password management features in Teams, for example, for personal use. I'm like, what the hell? Anyway, so, but this whole, the whole chat instant message to a text message thing, that's kind of interesting, even for business, because like if you've got casual workers, you know, casual, it could be, you know, retail or I don't know, maybe you run an ice cream stand or something and you want to be able to talk to your, well, probably business, probably not so great right now. But if you do, then you could talk to people and chat with them and it would go to text message. So I could see some business scenarios for that sort of chat to text type features. But this whole personal angle on Teams, I just don't buy it. I don't see it. And it's possible that it's just way too early and they haven't really put the pedal down on it yet. And, you know, what we're seeing is just, it's just not good enough yet. So I don't know. I just don't understand it. Like, would I ever invite my mother to a team?
So this is the part I don't get with it, because it's like, I can understand on the Skype angle, I get that. If you're just using like the calendaring side and the chat part of it, but all the other stuff like with different teams and different channels and stuff, that's where it kind of gets it gets confusing to me, where I don't really understand. I don't see the metaphor with Skype as well. Some of the features too are really, are kind of confusing to me, where it's like they have this feature that they're touting in this blog post about being notified when loved ones leave or arrive at a location. And it's a screenshot from an iPhone. But iOS has a feature called Find My, and you can actually say, let me know when this when that changes. It's like native on the phone, so I don't have to go through. And some of the things are a little confusing to me. I'm just kind of curious. I don't understand who they're trying to get with this, and I don't want it to sound like I'm dismissive of it. It's just more, I'm a little like, huh? So
yeah, I'm totally with you. I am dismissive of it. I just don't understand it. Maybe somebody can explain it to me. I just don't see it.
What you got for us?
Microsoft is launching a new thing called the Microsoft Pluton processor. It's from Krypton.
The planet?
The Pluton processor is basically, you know how laptops and stuff have TPM chips in them?
Yeah.
The trustworthy, I can't even remember what it stands for now. Processing
the security
module?
Chip.
Trusted processing module? It's the security chip. Yeah, it's where like keys, your keys for your virtual smart card would go, things like that. It's basically, it's supposed to be tamper-proof and all that sort of stuff, right? So the problem is between the CPU and that TPM chip, there's a bus, right, that goes between the two chips, and that can be tapped into. And so to make things more secure, Microsoft has designed a new TPM chip, I suppose, if you will, called the Pluton processor, which would be put into the CPU as part of its design. So they've effectively designed, you know how Apple's M1 thing came out last week or whatever it was, and they said there's the CPU, the GPU, there's these AI modules, there's this thingy McWhatsit, blah, 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 and there's all these different things inside the M1, kind of like that, except they're sticking the TPM thing in the system on a chip, in the CPU.
So completely naive here. Do our chip manufacturers, so AMD and Intel, would they be open to integrating? They would be?
Well, I don't know if they're open to it, but Microsoft has built this thing to say, you should stick this thing in your CPU. So that, you know, in your CPU designs, so that, you know, we can work together to make more secure computing. That's my understanding of it anyway. It said, in collaboration with leading silicon partners AMD, Intel, and Qualcomm, we're announcing the Microsoft Pluton security processor. So yeah, they're going to work with their OEMs to get the stuff baked into CPUs to make computers more secure.
That's interesting. Man, I took my last class. Here's this for like flipping open the Komodo. My last course in college that I had to pass to graduate was one around computer architecture and design. And it was around designing chips. And like we had to program assembler or assembly. And that's right then is where I figured out that it's like, I am not a hardware person at all. I mean, it was, I took the class and was like, at one point I had like a 28% or a 30% in it. The instructor was someone who was a Chinese national with a very, very heavy English accent, American English accent. And I just had to, I had the hardest time in the course. I was actually, all the stuff that we were, it was like project-based, I was doing fine with. But every time it was I walked in and took a test, it's like I'd been studying for a biology exam instead of that test. And I bomb it. And so I went in like almost in tears. I'm like, I'm supposed to graduate, take this exam on Tuesday, walk on Saturday, and start a job on Tuesday. I'm like, I am terrified here. I have to get a C or better. And he's like, come in and see me. So I went in and I talked to him, and it ends up in retrospect, after it happened, we ended up having a 3-hour oral exam because I went in and he's like, okay, so good. Good luck on the exam. And I'm like, what? You were supposed to help me. What am I not studying right? He's like, you understand this stuff. And I'm like, I know, but I can't take it. I can't take the test. And he's like, I just see it. And I walked out of there like terrified. And then I took the exam and I must have gotten like 2 out of every 5 questions right. I was so freaked out. And I find out the day before I'm supposed to walk that go to his outside of his office and I see the printout of all the grades and stuff and found we couldn't check them online back then. This was 20 some years ago. And
I get stuck on the wall. Yeah, I remember that.
He gave me a B+ on the damn final. Not gave me.
How about that?
I think he did that from our conversation. But yeah, so I walked in. I got my job.
We have something in common then. We have something in common. Computer architecture and design. I took one of those courses as well. And before I went to university, I wanted to be an actual architect, to build buildings, design
like bridges.
Buildings.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And me and my 16 or 17-year-old naivety was looking at the book of courses online of what I should take. And I was like, yeah, computer architecture and design, that sounds great. I'll be able to design buildings on computers. That sounds awesome. What are the prerequisites for that? Oh, it's a third-year course. That means I need to do all these other computer science courses. Weird. So I ended up going to university, taking a first-year computer science course so that I could get to third-year computer science to do computer architecture and design. It wasn't very long before I realized, hold on a second.
Hold on, wait a minute.
That course has nothing to do with actual architecture. And then I thought, well, I'm enjoying my computer science courses much more than I am my architecture courses. And so I switched degrees.
That, you know what? That's funny. I went to school.
Basically, when I fell into my profession, I literally, complete just ignorance and naivety got me into computer science. Like I had
this.
And then my mother said, oh, it doesn't make it. It makes perfect sense. Like, of course you would do that. I've always thought you'd end up in something like that. And I was like, what? Why didn't you tell me?
This is, we have more of an overlay. Wait, screw the news, man. This is going to be like a coming out party right now because like I had a very similar experience in college. So I went to college. My dad was a banker. Like he had two jobs from the time he graduated from college to the time I went to college. One, he started as a teller and just kept working his way up in this bank and then switched to be marketing pro sports team in the last few years when I was there. Well, when I was home, I'm in. And So I was like, I want to be a banker. I want to be in finance. Dad was in finance. That's what I want to do. So I went to college for a finance major. But I was interested in some of these other courses that were like computer type courses and technical courses. So I took those as kind of like my electives. And spare some of the listeners a bit of the story, but let's just say that my first year in college is not probably what my parents had in mind for me. I had a lot of fun. And it's funny, we hear these conversations right now.
Brilliant.
We were having cocktails with some neighbors of ours, and they have a kid that went to college this year, and is like going, it's just disappointing because he's not having the first year in college that I envisioned him having. And I'm like, trust me, without a pandemic, I'm sure that's what happened in my house. Anyway, so I did the same thing. I changed my major a couple times, but the summer before my senior year, I got an internship at one of those classic like .com startup web shops back home and came to realize like, holy crap, there's actually a job market for this kind of work. And I went back to college, switched my major. I couldn't do a true computer science degree. So I did a computer science like emphasis through the business school and did like a general business University of Florida had three different computer science degrees, one from liberal arts college, one from engineering, and one from business. Business was the easiest one, but that's where I already was, and I wanted to graduate in 4 years. So, yeah, I switched over to that and had to take like a C++ course. Yep, outing myself again. I got a C+ the first time I took C++, and then they're like, you need to do better. So I took it a second time, and I got a C+ the second time. So I got a CC++, not a C++. It wasn't until I took Java that
I... If you add them together, it's a CC++.
Exactly, right? So I was like, you know, C²++. So I don't know. I thought it was something in that, but...
Wow.
Ta-da.
Classic. Anyway, so that's the Pluton processor.
And in related Microsoft 365 news, they now have Microsoft 365 is now running in the Brazil data center. So that now if you are a Brazilian company, you can ensure that your data when you're working in Microsoft 365 stays at rest, stays inside your country boundaries.
Nice.
How's that for a quick pivot?
New region support.
New region support.
Yeah, love it. Okay. Keeping the pace of news here, I'm going to stay on the hacking theme and security theme. We'll link off to an article here that's talking about Microsoft says North Korea and Russia are trying to hack into the COVID vaccine research. I love that Microsoft is being more proactive about talking about some of its efforts to thwart either like hacking groups or malware groups, things like that. You know, we've talked about in the past, you know, Microsoft taking down, getting judgments in court orders to take down certain domains because they're being used in malware and phishing attacks and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're just being really open about the good that they are doing in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And so this is another one where it was saying that there are at least two hacker groups, Fancy Bear from Russia and Zinkin Serum from North Korea, as they tried to hack into various pharmaceutical companies that are working on COVID vaccine research. I think this is great. I think Microsoft's using its size and power for good in the world, and love that they're being open about what they're up to.
I do too. I mean, it's like it's nice when everyone tells you, you know, they look at these companies and say you should have more responsibility, give more money towards this cause or that cause, or whatever. And it's nice to see a company say, you know, where we can make a difference, we can use our skill set and our technology to make a difference which is better, which is a contribution to society, but we're going to use our skills in the best way we can to do this. And that's really cool. There's nothing coming back to them with this, like financially, other than just goodwill. Or, I mean, I guess there may be like some contracts and stuff, maybe like resume builder for the company and saying, look how much more secure we are because we can do this kind of stuff. But it's really cool. It's really cool. There was, you mentioned Fancy Bear. There was I watched a Netflix thing. I might have mentioned this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. There was a 2-part Netflix thing that detailed the whole like Fancy Bear and Russia propaganda. They're going way, way back. And the first episode is all about them ramping up their presence and how they were able to do things on social media. And then the second one kind of dives into more of the political side. Well, they're both political, but the second one goes into the whole Trump organization administration and the, I guess, issues around that. But they do a good job of like episode one, episode two, and the detail around it is like the research that this guy did. It's the same guy that did the, I forget the name off the top of my head, but it's the same guy that did like the Smartest People in the Room, the Enron documentary, and a couple other ones. Yeah. But it was, yeah. I found the first episode, look, regardless of your political affiliation, that first episode is fascinating. It's not awesome in terms of cool. It's like awesome in terms of what the detail that they unpacked and what Russia had been doing and this Fancy Bear and how they name their stuff. And
what's it called?
I will find it in just a minute.
Do you remember?
Okay. Yeah, I'll find it.
No worries.
So back to the Microsoft 365 news. Actually, I have some Microsoft Graph news. And it looks like somebody on the Graph team has whipped out a machete and is chopping stuff left and right. I've got deprecation notices and updates going flying at you. Are going to be coming, well, right now. The first one is that the Outlook REST API, the V1, they are deprecating that endpoint on April the 30th, 2021. I get it. They basically are saying, stop using the Outlook REST API, use Microsoft Graph instead. Furthermore, there is a V2 Outlook REST API. They will decommission this on November the 30th, 2022. So a full 2 years from now. But then there's another one that they've announced. And you and I was trying to get more detail on this because the news for this just came out the day before we were recording this, or the evening before. It actually got published at 6:20 at night, Eastern time. And we're not entirely sure. You and I have a guess on this. I've got a question into the Graph team. I've yet to hear back from them. Actually, let me just double check. And yep, still haven't heard anything back from them. So the title of the blog post is they're retiring Graph notifications and they're going to push everybody to using Azure notification hubs. Now, what the blog post says is that they announced Graph notifications in 2017 at Microsoft Build as a preview or a private beta. And the goal was to ship them as GA at Microsoft Ignite in November 2019. But they decided that from customer feedback, nope, we're not going to do that. We're going to use Azure notification hubs. The challenging thing with this is if you go search for something called Microsoft Graph notifications, that exact phrase, everything that comes back is called change notifications, which Graph developers know that as being effectively webhooks.
Microsoft speak
for webhooks. Mm. You and I don't think that this is the webhooks piece that they're saying they deprecate, because my understanding first was that change notifications / webhooks has been a GA feature for a while. So this thing that they're talking about, Graph notifications, is never made it to GA. And it looks like this is more about push notifications for mobile. But it's to the person who wrote the blog post, that's not clear. And they should have at least differentiated it.
The article's not very clear.
You can make a case looking at this that it's like, are you killing change notifications? Because I can't tell.
Yeah, that's what I read it as first as well. I think the terminology is really poor in the article. And they also don't link in the article when they say the notification service, they don't link to the docs about the notification service. So you're not sure which one. So yeah, but if you go into the Graph docs and take a look for notifications, there is a notifications service that's in preview, which is about mobile notifications to Apple's push notification service, to Android's push notification service, and to Windows one as well. So I think that's what it's related to.
I think you're right. Just feedback for those guys. I mean, I've given them feedback in a channel that they have for like some preview, some people that work on Graph stuff, that it's like, if that's what this is, then you guys need to tidy that thing up because that is not clear.
Yeah.
That's not clear.
No.
I looked at it and the first thing was like, you got to be kidding me. You guys are killing this. And not only they're killing it, they're killing it in 2.5 months. So I'm like, if you're killing webhooks in 2.5 months, I got a lot of questions for you. So
yeah, that can't be right. There's enough people that use webhooks that they wouldn't be doing that. Well, if they did, it would be the terribly wrong thing to do. But it does make me think that nobody's using the preview notification service for push notifications. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it that quick.
Seems like it.
Hey, speaking of graph, here is something that will impact the graph. So, you know, to use the graph, you have to register an Azure Active Directory app, right? You have to go and register an app, give it your scopes and all that sort of stuff. If you want other people from other tenants to use your app, you have to mark that registration as a multi-tenant app, right? So that, you know, somebody from contoso.com can log into your app as well as somebody from wingtiptoys.com or whatever can log into your app, right? If you mark your applications as multi-tenant apps now, users, not administrators, users will not be able to consent to your application unless that application has gone through the publisher verification process. So you need, as an app publisher, as somebody who writes an app and has one of these registrations, one of these multi-tenant registrations, if you want regular users to be able to log into your app and consent to the permissions that you're asking for, you have to go through the publisher verification process, which is a set of hoops. I've got a blog post about it on my blog. But it's basically linking your app registration to your Microsoft Partner ID so that when somebody's consenting to an app and they see that it's verified, they have a bit more trust that the app is from who it says it's from.
I gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So this means that after November the 9th, which we've gone past already, this will come into effect. But it's only for new apps that have been registered since that time. Right, so existing multi-tenant apps are not affected, is my understanding.
Gotcha. Well, that's good. That's good.
New apps.
Good to know for people who are going to be, who want to get stuff published and man, understand how the verification process works.
There's a bit of controversy about this because going through the publisher verification process is not all that easy. You've got to have an MPN ID, a Microsoft Partner ID. What happens for customers that are just not partners that want to be able to do this, that have multiple tenants in their own organization because they've acquired businesses, for example, or they've got different environments, segregated different tenancies for different reasons. So they'll have to go through this as well. And that's not clear how they'll do that. Also, I saw somebody tweet that bot framework applications always have to be marked multi-tenant. And so anybody doing a bot project would have to go through this and publisher verified. The other workaround here is to have admins, an administrator, pre-consent to an application for all users in an organization ahead of time. It's only users that won't be able to consent. Admins would still be able to go through and pre-consent everybody.
Gotcha. Cool. Nice bit of news. I did find, as a follow-up, I did find that show, documentary I was talking about. It's called Agents of Chaos by a guy named the director is Alex Gibney. It's not on Netflix. It's on HBO. There may be other places you can get it, but it premiered in September of 2020. And it's the more correct way to say it is that it investigated the 2016 Russia influence on the United States presidential elections. And the first part is leading up to really before they got involved with the actual election itself and how they learned, how they developed a bunch of things. He's got another one coming out. I had another one that just came out too. I didn't realize. It's called Totally Under Control, an in-depth look at the United States government's handling of COVID-19 and compares it to how South Korea did it. $2 on Amazon Prime and YouTube and Sweet. Included as part of Hulu. So
Agents of Chaos. Okay.
It's fascinating. It's you'll love it. Knowing you will love it. I liked it so much. There was so much info in it. I watched it a second time right after my wife and I finished it.
Yeah. Wow, nice.
So, okay.
Check it out.
In some not so Microsofty kind of Microsofty news, one of the Python creators, a guy named Guido van Rossum, is the creator of Python, the Python language. He was retired and he unretired to join Microsoft's dev division I think he's a technical fellow in joining. There's not much detail around what he's going to be doing what he's going to be doing for Microsoft. I talked to a friend of mine who does a lot of work with Python. I was like, do you have any insight on this? Like, do you know anything about this guy? I've never heard of him. You know, as a Python guy, is this kind of familiar too? And it's like, my judgment, it looks like he got bored because he's been pretty bored on Twitter for the last little bit. So it looks like he just needed something else to do. And Microsoft said, hey, you want to join us?
Retired, got bored, went back to work.
Gotcha.
So
that's cool. You know, even if they hire them to just work on the Python project for everybody, right, as an open source project, that's great. They're supporting an open source project.
He said, he even said on Twitter when he announced it, he's like, what am I doing? To do what? He goes, there's too many things to say, but I'll make using Python better for sure and not just on Windows. There's lots of open source here. Watch this space. How's that for a teaser?
That's cool. Right. Are you ready to move on?
Yeah. You want to do some picks?
Yeah.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. Okay, Mr. Johnson, what picks do you have for us today?
I've got a nostalgia pick.
I peeked at this morning and I don't understand it, so I'm really looking forward to your... I think I know what it is, but I give it to me. Come on, share with us.
So anybody of our ilk and age, by that I mean age, who was into PCs from a young age will remember the legendary Sound Blaster 1.0 card.
Okay, that's what I thought this was. Okay, good. I saw SB, but I never saw Sound Blaster. So yes, okay, continue.
So there is a GitHub project called the Snarkbarker, which I don't know what's behind the name. I really don't know. But it is a open source clone of the Sound Blaster 1.0 card.
Ah, okay.
So you can, there's files for the fabrication for the printed circuit board. There's a bill of materials for all the chips you need. There's the schematic. There's everything you need to go build one of these cards yourself. And it's all up on GitHub. And I don't know, like, it'd be so cool to build your own card and put it in your PC. I mean, maybe not your primary PC. Maybe if you've got an old one sitting around, because you're going to need, I don't know if it's a PCI. I don't think it's a PCI. It might not, yeah. I'm not sure if it's a PCI slot that it fits in. But anyway, I doubt it if it's that old. I can't remember what the previous ones were called, but I bet you're going to have to fiddle with like jumpers to get your COM stuff working right, so you don't have conflicts.
Well, there was something, there's a picture of it, and I saw a chip, and then I saw a transistor or a resistor actually jumping from one side, like over, like doing a hopscotch over the chip from one pin to the next pin.
Yeah, and in the description, they explain why, what that's for.
Yeah.
It's a picture below it. And so there's, yeah, anyway, pretty cool. I just thought it was like, hey, if you want to build your own Sound Blaster, that's pretty sweet, bro. Yeah.
That's what I thought it was. That is cool. That is cool. I love to build my own board. Like I've come close to like doing a little hardware project and having all the chips and using like having the breadboard. I've done that a bunch of times, but then like I want to build something like, okay, well, I'm going to get like the silicone printed and then I want to put the, you know, I'll solder the chips on and everything. Like I want to, it's like one of those things I just want to check it off and say, yeah, I was able to do this.
Yeah. I think this is beyond my capabilities, but it'd be kind of fun to do.
Oh, totally. Hey, in the middle of our picks session, I have breaking news. Somebody from the Graph team got back to us and said that we're right. It is about push notifications. This is not about change notifications. And even better yet, the same person from the Graph team said, quote, that blog post is bleeping awful. So I won't say who from the Graph team told us, but by the time this episode comes out, the blog post may be changed because apparently it has now been escalated based on the questions that you and I asked this morning.
To go fix it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
We can always, yeah, there are positive signs that come out of things. There you go.
Exactly. All right. So I have my pick is, it's not a good story, but it's interesting. It's from a site that you want to go down a rabbit hole. Go to forensic-architecture.org/investigation.
Is it computer architecture or building architecture?
Tragedy architecture. So what these guys were hired to do...
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
These guys were hired by, I don't remember by who, but they were hired to come in and do a recreation based on videos and photos that were all shared on social media of the Port of Beirut explosion that happened a few months ago. They figured out what the first pictures were. This is fascinating. They sliced it down to where all the pictures came from. They built a 3D model of Beirut, show where these pictures and videos were taken from. We're able to determine where certain, when this stuff was going on, where the fire and the smoke was coming from in the warehouse. They've got video from the fire brigade that showed up, from people who were close to it, people that were far from it. They showed how they got videos from just a couple months prior of inside the warehouse where all the ammonium nitrate was and how it was being stored. It's like, if this was stored according to rules in Australia, here's how it would have been stored. If it was stored according to in the United Kingdom, here's where how it would have been stored. Here's where the 1 ton of fireworks were that were in the warehouse. Here's where all the tires were. It is the detail on it, like what they were able to figure out. It's like, you always see like one of those explosions. You're like, how in the world are you guys ever going to be able to piece this together? And then they explain it like, so that's how you do it. This is really cool.
That's incredible. That's really incredible.
It's really cool.
The Challenger documentary on Netflix last week, I think it was, week before, something like that. And they did a similar kind of thing for how, you know, during the Challenger explosion. Yep. And I read the Rogers report. I didn't read the whole thing. I skipped through a lot of it, but I read parts of the Rogers report, and just on the level of detail was just unreal. How they, you know, in a similar kind of way, they're able to work back from a big explosion in the sky back to, here's the exact thing around the O-ring design, and here are the sequence of events that led up to it, and then what happened afterwards, and then during the explosion, here's the sequence of events of what happened to the orbiter and which parts broke off when and where and where they went and all that sort of stuff. And like crew survivability, materials design, lessons learned, things like it just blew my mind, the level of detail they went to through the investigation. And it sounds real similar to this.
It was. And what's neat about this too is that the things that he, the investigation, it's a fairly long video. Like, I mean, off the top of my head, I want to say it's like a 15-minute investment of your time to go watch it. But the deeper you get into it, the more interesting it is. They don't make any conclusions, but what is interesting about it is that they've posted all of their data in the 3D models. They've published everything onto GitHub so that in all of the investigations that are going on, they can use the data that these guys have put together and their program for other people to be able to use. You just reminded me of something that I am going to use the fact that I'm the host of this episode this week, I'm going to use my host discretion and I'm going to declare a shared pick for the two of us.
Okay.
Last weekend.
Ruling on the field.
Yeah, ruling on the field.
Both of your picks are not good enough.
No. So this is going to level it up. And a lot of people will look at this and go like, this isn't that big of a deal. But this was an experience. So over this past weekend, I was with my sister-in-law and she lives on a sailboat and she's all into all the sailing stuff. And like a fun thing for her, she mentions, hey, you know, I went to this boatyard, which is like the equivalent of kind of like a junkyard for cars. And it's kind of a, you know, you pick it, you pull it, pay by the weight, and you can go use it on your boat or something like that. And I was like, hey, there's one of those right near our house. And she's like, seriously? I was like, yeah, there's a really big one. Remember when that plane went off the runway at the Navy base into the river? The plane's actually over there because they floated it down the river on a barge and they've pulled it up and it's over here in this thing. So there's like a 737 that's in there. And I was wrong. They've actually disassembled it and they've removed it. So it's no longer there anymore. But I grab my iPad and I go over and I'm like, yeah, look, let me show you where it is. And so I zoom in, I got the satellite view of it and everything. I'm like, see all this? She goes, oh, that looks so cool. And I'm sitting here scrolling through and I'm like, what is that? I go over and I get a little, zoom in a little bit more. I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm on Apple Maps on my iPad, right? And it's not tagged, but I zoom in and I'm like, that looks like an external fuel tank for a space shuttle. I go over on Google Maps and I look, and son of a gun, someone's actually tagged it. It literally shows it because my Tesla GPS uses Google Maps for its mapping. And I can actually type in external fuel tank space shuttle and I can get directions to it in my car. 15 minutes from my house, there's an external fuel tank sitting there. And I sent this to you. I'm like, oh my God, this is 15 minutes from my house. Texted it to you. And by the time I woke up the next morning, you sent me a link to where you found it, where it was a surplus. It was the last remaining fuel tank that NASA was selling off. A museum in Central Florida bought it. They moved it down a barge from Mississippi down to the Gulf of Mexico and around inside into the St. John's River through Jacksonville, down to some place called Green Coast Springs, which is about 15 minutes from me, which is, I didn't know this, but apparently, according to my sister, that's where when all the people from up north, when they need to move their boats, if they don't leave them up there and they want to move them down to the south to use them, they bring them to Green Coast Springs because that's apparently a huge place to pull stuff out. Anyway,
gotcha.
When they realized that, hey, this is going to be super expensive to move power lines and all that stuff, They were like, yeah, it's just going to sit there. So the next day I got up and I drove down there, and in like 15 minutes, my son and I went down there, and sure enough, there's a freaking external fuel tank. The last one, about 15 minutes from my house. And you can see it, like when you cross over this little two-lane bridge or across the river to get there, you can see it from way away. There's no foam on it. The insulating foam, it's just metal. You can walk up to it. You can knock on it. It's very unsettling getting underneath that thing. But
yeah, I bet.
Dude, it was...
I am so jealous you got to visit this.
I will.
It turns out it was a test article, right? They built a real tank to do like vibration testing and all that sort of stuff on. And apparently, according to this article, it's the last one in existence.
You know,
flight quality one.
I would have loved for a view to have been there when I saw this. But I will tell you, there was one part of this story that really pissed me off. That I took a selfie video of this. I took some pictures and I posted them on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And I had friends, local friends from Jacksonville, from my area, who all were like, you didn't know that was there? I'm like, you f***ers. This thing's been here for 7 years. It's been here for 2013. I've been in this house. I've been in this area for 20 years, over 21 years. And and if you're my friend, you know I like freaking space stuff. And you never thought that it would be like, I find it interesting that I just learned that there's a space shuttle external fuel tank just down the road. And I've never seen Andrew talk about this. And you didn't think to tell me about this?
Yeah.
You jackasses.
Yeah. 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 Thanks very much. Oh, dear. Yeah, that's really cool. You got to visit that. Really sweet.
It is cool.
I like it a lot.
I suspect it's going to be there for a very long time because it looks quite heavy, and it doesn't look like I checked it, and it's on one of those purpose built trailers that are just for it. So I can't hook it up to like a tow hitch.
You can't take it.
I was trying to see what size of ball do I need for the tow hitch on my car to be able to pull it.
Yeah.
Because I mean they got a Toyota Tundra to pull the space shuttle through Los Angeles. So I'm like, I got a Tesla. I mean, I got to be able to pull this thing.
You can carry this thing. Exactly. Totally.
Yeah, but each wheel has its own little motor.
Meredith will be stoked.
Well, so that was the funny thing is I asked her, she's like, well, what are we going to... I said, can I bring this home? And she's like, no. She goes, what would you do with it? I'm like, rain barrel. And she's like, are you kidding me? And then she's like, there's no way we're going to be able to fit this in our backyard. So I texted it to one of my neighbors, Chris, and I was like, check this out.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, we could totally put this in our backyards. I'm like, you'd split it with me? He goes, it's too big. He goes, I bet Brian would be cool with it too, who's my neighbor on the other side. And I'm like, hey, let's do it. And Meredith looked at it and she's like, hell no.
No. It'd be the ultimate man shed. Oh. Turning this thing into a shed out the back of your house would be awesome.
I mean,
it'd be multiple stories, right? You'd have at least two stories inside it,
mm-hmm.
two levels. And you could turn it into office space and all of that. Like, you could have a server room out there. You could have, like, it could be the cloud shuttle.
It's the
cloud space shuttle tank.
It's the perfect spot for
Azure
to weather a hurricane.
Region.
I mean, I'm like, I started making pitches. I'm like, what about it hurricane floats. Preparation?
Yeah.
She's like, is it watertight?
Exactly.
I'm like, it held fuel. Yeah, I think so.
It's got multiple tanks inside it. I looked up the schematics for it. It's more complex than just an outer shell, right? There's multiple tanks inside it. So you'd have to gut it and things like that. But the renovation would be pretty awesome.
I'm game.
Good find.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you partaking in this too. I was like, how in the hell did this get here? I'm just surprised I'd never seen it because it's so big.
10-4 rubber ducky.
I've crossed that bridge multiple times and looked over and never thought. I mean, it's a big orange tube over there. And you're like, you look at it and go like, yeah, it kind of looks like a shuttle external fuel tank. But no chance. Yup.
Not a chance. It's just a big pipe.
Mm. New. Cool, man.
All right, man. Have a good one.
I will do the same. And I will talk to you next week.
November's only one. Good night.
Later. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.